South Australia, I'm happy to say, has a thriving literary scene. It's absolutely loaded with local talent. Author Jennifer Mills is one of those people. She's lived in various parts of Australia but now calls the Clare Valley home. And Jennifer, as I said, has written three novels, a collection of short stories, and is fiction editor at Overland. Jennifer, welcome to the studio. Lovely to have you here.
So nice to be here, Deb. Thank you.
And you left the gourmet weekend for us. So
I did. I fled the busloads of people that descended on the Clare Valley. It's a bit of a relief to be in town, actually.
Oh, good. Thank you. I don't feel so bad about it then. And Jennifer, you actually grew up in Sydney, but you've lived all over the place, haven't you?
Yeah, as an adult, I think my life has been quite nomadic. I've moved to Wollongong in my 20s from Sydney and then went travelling around the world and came back to Australia and didn't want to live in a city again. Couldn't afford to live in Sydney, so I shifted to Alice Springs thinking that I would stay about 6 months and see what it was like, and I ended up staying 6 years.
What was it that kept you there?
Partly a love of that desert landscape that I find a really moving and beautiful and fascinating place, but also the energy of the people in the town and the surrounding areas. You know, a lot of us have fascination with Indigenous culture, Indigenous art, and that was part of it as well. And I was working in social support sort of services. I was working at a women's refuge there, and that was very, very hands-on sort of frontline job that tired me out, but it felt like I was doing something really useful in the world. So that was a part of it.
Would have been a really challenging job, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, we have so many entrenched social problems in Australia, really, and they are hidden. But when you work on the front line like that, they're in your face every day.
Absolutely. And it's really possible for us, many of us, to ignore things like prisons or domestic violence when our lives aren't directly touched by it, but you don't realise how common these things are and that every family at some point will be touched by some catastrophe like this.
And it cuts across anything. It cuts across money, class, education. It's just endemic, isn't
it?
Yeah,
really? Absolutely. Unfortunately, that's true.
Well, Jennifer, did you have a bookish family? Were books important to you as a child? Were they important in your family?
My family is a book revering people. My mother in particular is a great reader. And so growing up, I had shelves full of Patrick White and Virginia Woolf, and sort of delved into her books well before I probably was old enough to digest them.
Best time to delve into
them,
I think.
Absolutely. Being the youngest of three children, I pretty much slipped under the radar so long as I was out of the way. And if I was sitting somewhere with a book, I was probably at my happiest.
Well, I say it every time we talk to an author, but it's absolutely true. If you love reading, you are never alone in the world.
Absolutely. And books set you up. You know, I was chatting about this with my partner about my niece, who's also a great reader like I was. And I think books really arm you for the world. They really prepare you for all the possibilities that you might face in life.
That's right. You can't actually live every other person's experience in real life, but you can live it through reading their stories.
Thank goodness you can't live them all in life. I think you'd be exhausted.
We wouldn't want to live many of them, that's for sure. Well, your first book, The Diamond Anchor, from 2009, was written when you were living in Wollongong. It was about an unexpected letter from one childhood friend to another that leads them to sort of look back on their lives together. What prompted you to write that story? Was that one of those ones that was just burning in you that you had to tell, or did you have to sit down and think, what am I going to write?
Well, that story came very specifically from the place that I was living, north of Wollongong and south of Sydney. And there's this very beautiful little strip of coastal towns there that sort of rapidly become gentrified in the last 15 years. But while I was living there, it was still quite a quiet beachside town. And I was very inspired by the place. And that story of Grace and May really landed whole. It just fell into my lap. And I just started writing it as one of those books. I don't think that will ever happen to me again.
It wrote itself.
Yeah. And I felt like, because that was my first book, I was like, oh, this is easy. I can do this again. And then the rest of them have just been hard slog.
Isn't that amazing, though? It's not an uncommon experience of authors, and often with the first book, that it just comes tumbling out of you and characters seem to present themselves fully formed.
And I think that's partly because if you read a lot and you think a lot about story, you end up, your subconscious does a lot of the work before you actually sit down. And so if you're, say, 25 when you finally sit down to write a book. You've got 25 years of lived experience behind you and you feel like you have all of this stuff to say, whereas the following books, you sort of narrow that stuff down into
what's happened since
More specific kind of projects, you know, like Dyschorania is very much an environmental project about climate change, and so that sort of created its own sort of limitations and structure for me. I'm jumping ahead.
No, that's okay. Well, we can jump ahead. I mean, I was going to ask you about Gone, because that was about a prisoner leaving prison without much of an identity, and I wondered if that had arisen from your experiences of working in Alice Springs.
Yeah, and actually before that as well, I was working with ex-prisoners in Sydney for a time, and had also been doing a hell of a lot of hitchhiking in my youth just to get around on the cheap. And so met a lot of strangers and a lot of truck drivers and a lot of people who'd survived wonderful things. And you do have this sort of incredible relationship in someone's car where you sort of, you're looking at the same landscape, but you're not looking at each other. And you have this sort of stranger on a park bench kind of intimacy can develop where people will really tell you their deepest, darkest secrets because they know they're never going to see you again. So it was great material for me.
Well, it's true. It's when you sometimes when you meet a stranger, you'll tell them more than you'll tell a friend because it's so self-revelatory, or it's something that, you know, might change a friend's perception of you. Whereas with a stranger, you don't have that inhibition, do you?
Totally. The stakes are lower. Mm.
Well, I'm amazed that you're still hitchhiking in this current era. I mean, I did it way back when, many decades ago, but we're not certainly encourage anyone to hitchhike. Let's come to your new book, Dyschorania. It's an interesting title in itself. I had a bit of a look around to find out what dyschorania actually means. I didn't know whether it's a word that you developed yourself or whether it actually exists. And I found a reference to sort of being able to distort concepts of time. Is that what it means?
Yeah, well, it's a made-up word, but it follows the same grammatical kind of logic as something like dyslexia, which it just means time sickness, essentially. So, of course, as anyone does, when I made this word up, I Googled it and found other people who had also made it up, one of whom was a music theorist named Simon Reynolds, who had written about the use of samples and distortion in music as a way of talking about how in contemporary times we experience time in a really different way than we used to in the culture, because you can at once have this sort of futurism and incredible nostalgia and memory stimulated at the same time.
I think in our current modern day world where we are constantly bombarded with imagery, both from the now and from the past, it is a very apt thing to use within a book. Because
absolutely. It feels very of the moment, which is kind of ironic, but, you know, like you have the internet reminding you of what you were doing a year ago, and you constantly, I think for me, it came back to this sense of climate change, of almost like powerlessness, swimming in this moment, unable to change the trajectory of the future, but also this feeling of disappointment and sorrow of a lost future that I feel like perhaps we were promised growing up, that has been rudely snatched away as we are killing the planet in front of us. It's quite a shock to the system, and it's quite an existential threat in a way that is not just a physical threat to our well-being, but also I think threatens our sense of who we are as humans and what we mean on this earth and what our civilization means. So
it is 9:50. My guest in the studio is South Australian author Jennifer Mills. We're talking about her new book, Dyschorania. I'm Deb Tribe. You're tuned in to ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill. Well, let's have a look at the book. I mean, it's set in the sleepy town of Clapstone. Is that based on any particular town, or is it an amalgam of a few towns?
It's a bit of an amalgam. You know, I live in the mid-north, and so quite close to the Upper Spencer Gulf area, and so I sort of stole a bunch of stuff from my local area, and I think the landscape will feel very familiar to people who've been to Whyalla and Port Augusta and places like that. The sort of this flat sort of sea and this quite austere landscape. But I wanted it very much to be an imaginary place so that I wasn't responsible to real human beings in writing about that place, but also so that I could play and do what I wanted to the people in the town.
Well, that's right. You need that sense of freedom when you're writing. One of the things that jumped out at me almost immediately were the number of animal motifs in the book, you know, from the almost the first pages, possums, honey eaters, thylacines, tree kangaroos, even black rhinos. Mm. Are you an animal lover?
Absolutely. And I always seem to kill them in my fiction. I've been a vegetarian for 22 years and I love animals. And I think I'm kind of slightly horrified by my own subconscious mind sometimes because there's always a lot of trauma visited upon animals in my work.
Well, who knows what you're playing out there, Jennifer, but the story is about Sam, and she suffers from unusual migraines. They're sort of like deja vu, but they're real. She is seeing ahead moments in time. She has these incredible visions. Incredibly well-written relationship, I think, with her mother, her sort of fraught relationship with her mother,
thank you.
Ivy. It really spoke very deeply to me. So in it, really what you're doing through Sam's visions is you're looking at the issue of great importance to you, which is climate change. And one thing that happens in the book, which absolutely terrifies me as an ocean and beach lover, is that the sea actually disappears.
Yes, and that's not a spoiler, listeners, because this happens very early in the book. But because the book jumps around in time quite a lot, you see the same catastrophic event from various angles and various points of view. And that's true of actually a lot of the events in the book. They're sort of reiterated from different angles. And that was a way of me sort of trying to draw out meaning. I don't know where that image of the sea retreating came from. I think parts of this book I think I just hallucinated, to be honest. I didn't sit down and plan it. I sat down and started writing and I had this image in my head of a young woman climbing down from a abandoned Ferris wheel, and the rest of the book sort of unfolded. And then the difficulty with it was not so much writing it but putting it into shape, and it went through many, many drafts before I found the final shape for it.
It is beautifully written and quite a terrifying image for me. I loved the cover of the book. It's arresting. It's a beautiful cuttlefish, one of the most amazing creatures that exist, I think, on the planet. And you have actually, since writing the book, been swimming with cuttlefish at Point Loli, just near Whyalla. How was that experience for you?
It was amazing. I actually, for the same reason that I didn't want to base the book on a real town, I also didn't go to swim with the cuttlefish until after I'd finished the book, because I wanted them to stay in my imagination as in the shape that I wanted them to.
Did they live up to your imagination?
And so I thought, going to swim with them, I was like, oh yeah, I know what I'm going to be looking at. This is fine. I've seen the videos. But actually snorkeling out there off Point Loli, it's just an absolutely life-changing experience to see these very other creatures who have startlingly human-like eyes, that if you lock eyes with them, you can see their intelligence the same way that you could see the intelligence of a cockatoo if you meet its eye. And that, to me, it was quite an unsettling experience. I actually wrote an essay about it, which was published in a recent issue of Overland.
Swimming with Aliens.
Swimming with Aliens.
Is that theory out there that cephalopods have come to us from space?
There is, yes.
And so that is a theory that I certainly find cephalopods amazing. I'm not a vegetarian or vegan, but I did stop eating cephalopods several years ago when I read about their incredibly high intelligence level.
And that's interesting, Deb, because a lot of scientists are the same. A lot of scientists who study squid and cuttlefish actually stop eating them because they're so amazed, and octopus, because they're so amazed by the intelligence.
They are incredible creatures. Well, we are almost out of time, Jennifer Mills. The book is Dyschronia that we're talking about. I think it's absolutely beautifully written, but I quickly wanted to talk about your work because you are a fiction editor at Overland. So I guess you're dealing with people that have been in your shoes, that are perhaps first writers. Are you finding that you can have a bit of a mentoring role in that position?
Absolutely. You know, it's funny you mention that because I'm at a feminist writers festival in Melbourne next weekend talking about this very subject of mentoring other writers. And for me, I think being an editor is a very pedagogical experience. You sort of can sometimes, just seeing the simple flaws in somebody's work or a way to improve it, you can show them how to think about their own work in a different way. And one thing that I I really enjoy is also giving people the confidence to talk about their work in a professional context. Sometimes you'll be publishing somebody's first short story that they've had published, and that's can be just a wonderful moment for them. We also run creative writing prizes every year, so we have the honour of being able to give away thousands of dollars to emerging writers every year, which is a fantastic thing to be able to do. So,
well, it is, and it's a difficult job because you're alone in a room and you do need money to sustain yourself because you have to approach it as a job, don't you, really, if you're wanting to live as a writer.
Yeah, well, and it's a craft as well. I think, you know, you need to do some work to make some money as well. So, like, I do some freelance work and things these days. I don't have a day job outside of writing. But I think people often ask me how I discipline myself, and I don't. I have a practice that I follow, but it doesn't feel like discipline to me because I actually love going to work every day.
That's right. Well, they say if you love your work, you'll never work a day in your life. Jennifer Mills, we are out of time. Congratulations on Dyschronia. It's an excellent book, just so well written. Great to have you here in South Australia as one of our talented collection of writers, and thank you very much for coming into the studio today.
Thanks so much for having me, Deb. It's been a real pleasure to talk.
Thank you. Jennifer's book is Dyschronia.